Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we have a chance to talk about a woman, actually a man and a woman, but primarily zeroing in a little bit on a woman who was a heroine of World War II. Her name was Mildred Fish Harnick, and she has strong ties to Wisconsin. And there's even a day set aside to honor her here in the state. I think it was 1986 that happened. But I would venture to guess that 99 out of 100 people, or maybe even 999 out of 1,000 people, if you asked who she was, they wouldn't know. And that's why I'm so pleased to have Joel Waldinger with us, producer of Wisconsin Public Television Weekly News Magazine show. In Wisconsin. He's produced a video, a doc, titled The Mildred Fish Harnick Story, and he's one of our guests today. Don Heath Jr. knew the Fish Harnicks in Berlin, where his father, Don Heath Sr., was the first secretary of the U.S. Embassy starting in 1937, I believe. Mildred tutored Don Jr., and he also helped the resistance through them. And so we're going to learn today about this wonderful production and obviously about Mildred Fish Harnick and her story as we visit with them today. You may have questions or comments as we move along, and I hope you do. Do you know the story of Mildred Fish Harnick and her husband Arvid? How do you think you would have acted in Mildred's place? It's interesting questions that all of us, I think, can ask ourselves. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Don Heath Jr., are you with us by phone? Let's see. Well, let me try here again. There we go. Don, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. He joins us by phone, obviously. Joel Waldinger with me in the studio. Joel, great to have you with us as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
How did you come to discover Mildred Fish Harnick yourself, and why did you want to make this documentary?
I was on a German-American journalism fellowship in 2006 in Berlin, and my last day I had a little bit of time, and I went to what was former Gestapo headquarters in Berlin. The building was heavily bombed, and all that's left is the foundation, but they've turned it into a memorial site. And as I was walking through this outdoor exhibit, I came across what were the Gestapo mugshots of Mildred Fish Harnack, and underneath the photo it said University of Wisconsin-Madison. And you kind of wipe your eyes and look at the photos and say, what? Who is this and why haven't I heard about this woman? And so when I came back, I learned there was a day in Wisconsin. September 16th is a day of public recognition in Wisconsin public schools for Mildred Harnack. But there weren't, I couldn't find any schools at that time that were doing anything in her honor. I have two kids in the public school system. Mm-hmm. They knew nothing about her. Yeah. And the more I dove into her story and kind of peeled back the layers of the onion, more and more was revealed, and I just thought this is a story that I think should be told in Wisconsin and resurrected to some degree.
Well, she was, and we can skip ahead a bit and say that she is the only woman, I believe, who was executed under the direct orders of Adolf Hitler.
Slight clarification, the only American.
I mean, the woman. Only American woman.
Correct.
Sorry.
She was.
And let's set the stage for this incredible story. She and her husband, Arvid, they grew up in turn-of-the-century Milwaukee, right?
Mildred did.
Mildred did.
Arvid is from Germany,
yeah.
But Mildred grew up on the west side of Milwaukee, around 26th and Highland.
And they met at the University of Wisconsin.
They met here by, some would say chance, some would say by mistake, but he wandered into the wrong classroom and she was lecturing English. And he was so mesmerized by her beauty and her voice that he stayed for the entire lecture and afterwards introduced himself. And he apologized for his broken English. And she said, I don't speak German very well. And he said, well, maybe we can teach each other. And within a matter of months, they were married.
it's a great story, isn't it, Don Heath?
Yes, it is. She had no idea when she was a teacher and student at the university that she would suddenly translate herself to Germany and become a dual citizen. And it was just incredible. Also, she told me of adventures the two of them had while Arvid, who was studying American labor unions, she and he traveled around parts of the country just hitchhiking with packs on their backs, which people didn't do much in those days. And she wore men's clothing.
Ah.
And so she got an introduction to the very active life that her future husband was going to lead her.
Well, I've got to say, you had the amount of research that you did on this was absolutely fantastic. It took you to different places around the world a little bit.
Quite a few places. It started 5 years ago. And, you know, tracing her roots in Milwaukee, one of the difficulties there is they moved a lot. Her father wasn't wealthy and didn't hold jobs very well. And so they continually moved. But the street names in Milwaukee all changed in the late 1920s. Well, she lived there before that. So that was one difficulty. Then her life here in Madison, same thing. As students, they move every year. So tracing her roots here. And then, of course, we went overseas to Berlin and Germany. And the surviving members of the immediate Harnack family, Arvid's relatives, are in London. So we were on the ground for less than 24 hours in London getting some interviews and some photos there on our way to Berlin last summer.
Oh. Buck in Madison has a comment or question. Hi, Buck. Thank you for calling.
Oh, Mildred Fish Harnack is such a hero, and I'm so proud that she came from Milwaukee. There she is, deliberately going into the maw of Nazi Germany to help defeat him, right?
Yeah.
Mildred Fish Harnack Day, is it September 16th?
That's correct.
We should all spend at least 5 minutes thinking about standing up to bullies. She's my girl.
Yeah. Well, she indeed was... a heroine. There's no doubt about it, Joel.
She was a heroine, but I think, unfortunately, after the war, her name was used for propaganda purposes by both sides,
yeah,
by the Americans and the East Germans and the Soviets. And I think it's only until recently did we get the true story and the scope of her bravery and courage.
Well, let's go back and talk about, how did they wind up? They love story here. They're met in Madison. They loved Wisconsin, loved Madison. But what took Mildred and Arvid to Germany?
Well, Arvid went back to study in Germany. He already had his law degree here. He was studying the labor movement. He actually moved back to, they had gotten married, but he moved back to Germany without Mildred initially. He was a student and wrote Mildred's mother and said, you know, as a student, I can't afford to support her as well. And once Mildred was able to get a grant or a foundation scholarship to go to Germany, then she joined him and they continued their studies there. But I think also they learned a lot here in Madison through John R. Commons, the Wisconsin Idea, what Arvid was studying, and that's something that they thought that they could apply to the German economy as well.
Yeah, and they became involved in socialist politics.
Yes, they did.
Say, identifying as Marxists. And through trips to the Soviet Union, that's how Arvid sort of became was approached by intelligence for the Soviets.
Right. Arvid had an interest in the Soviet planned economy at that time. And as intellects all over the world did, it's not something that today we view as necessarily a negative, what was going on with communism. And this was before, obviously, all the purges and the evils of Stalin were well known. But intellects were studying the Soviet planned economy. And that's what Arvid's study was. So he had formed this group to study the Soviet Union. Mildred got interested in all things Soviet as well, books and movies, and Arvid planned a trip to the Soviet Union in the early 1930s, and that is when it was believed that Soviet intelligence first made its contact with Arvid.
Don, you were a child at the time with your father, Don Heath Sr. He was the first secretary of the U.S. Embassy in Berlin starting in 1937. What are your memories of Berlin at that very precarious time?
Well, politically, even for a child of 10 years, it was a sort of a frightening place. I developed German friends and got to know other German people and realized that they were all under restraints to be enthusiastic about Hitler, to appear to be 100% with the government. And if I saw instances of people who weren't in agreement being beat up, school children being beat up by their fellow students. And, of course, I witnessed the persecution of the Jews and the breaking up the Jewish stores and the arresting of Jewish citizens in October 1938. So I had a basic fear of Germany, although I enjoyed being there. And my father sent me to work on several farms so that I got to know different parts of the country. I was very worried early in the game. I was very worried because I knew that my parents were on a clandestine mission. My father wasn't just a diplomat. He was also an intelligence officer for the Department of the Treasury. And my parents had to school me on what to say and what not to say and what not to say inside of our apartment because it was bugged. And then as I got to know Mildred and Arvid, who were a number of people my father developed in the German economics ministry.
In fact, Mildred tutored you, did she not?
Yes. When the war broke out in 1939, my mother and I came back to Germany to find all of our friends and the American school gone. And Mildred volunteered to be my tutor in American history and American literature. And her niece, Jane Donner, another American who lived in Berlin, taught me other forms of history. This was to keep me out of the German school system, where at my age at 10, there was a book called World Knowledge, which showed how different races of people in different parts of the world were intellectually inferior to Germans and rated them. So the lowest being the Jews and the next lowest being the Africans and so forth. This was the kind of thing that was being taught in the schools. My father didn't want me to have any part of that.
Yeah. And you knew obviously knew the Harnacks very well.
I knew them very well, and I saw her a lot. And she was able to get me a secret teacher. In a secret manner, we had to advertise for a politically trustworthy teacher. She told us this. Interview six or seven people, and then she would send a man along who was a member of her underground organization. And he became my tutor.
Yeah.
He was one of Germany's most famous World War I heroes, having received 3 Iron Crosses and lost his arm and part of his face. And one day he walked down to Hitler's headquarters in Berlin in 1936, I believe it was, took all of his medals from the army, including the highest order of the Knight's Order of the Iron Cross, threw them on the pavements in front of Hitler's bodyguards and then spit on them and said some unkind things about Hitler. He spent a few days being tortured by the Gestapo, but the general staff of the army interfered and said, "This is one of our great heroes. You can't do that to him." So he became my teacher. He had no source of income except for us. And he was, at heart, I think, not a communist, but an extreme socialist. So at the age of 10, I was learning all kinds of things that I never believed to know before.
We're talking today with Joel Waldinger, producer of Wisconsin Public Television's weekly news magazine show in Wisconsin. He has produced the documentary, The Mildred Fish Harnack Story. Don Heath with us as well, Don Heath Jr., Don knew the Fish Harnacks in Berlin, where his father, Don Sr., was the first secretary of the U.S. Embassy in 1937. And Don Jr. Helped the resistance through working with Mildred. And we'll learn about that and also learn more about the entire story of Mildred Fish Harnack as we visit with our two guests. You can join in as well with your own questions or comments or thoughts. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a comment or a question there. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. I was fortunate to have an advanced look at a documentary produced by Joel Waldinger. It is the Mildred Fish Harnack story, her story of her life with her husband Arvid during World War II, when they supplied information to the Russians and to the United States against Hitler's Germany. And it's a fascinating story as you visit with Joel and Don Heath Jr., who knew the Fish Harnacks, Mildred Fish Harnack and her husband Arvid, and actually worked with them. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Don, let's talk about that a little bit now. You were involved in a little of that espionage.
Yes. My mother and father came to Germany knowing that they were going to be meeting people like the Harnacks and working with them clandestinely. Not long after we arrived in Germany, late 38 and in 39, we began meeting the Harnacks in the countryside away from Berlin for weekend walks, sometimes overnight. My father could also meet Arvid Harnack publicly in Berlin, but we didn't want the German government to know how much meeting was going on.
Mm-hmm.
During these long walks that we took, I heard Arvid argue with Dad about Russia and about communism, but also passing information to my father. And Arvid, I have to say, was one of maybe 11 Germans in the economics ministry who at one time or another volunteered information for the United States and Great Britain, knowing that it would get to the right people when they talked to my dad. This worried me a great deal, even though I was 10, 11, 13. I had daymares, as I call them, nightmares of my parents being arrested and held. And I knew how cruel the Germans could be, because I'd experienced some very unpleasant things during my summer work, where I saw Polish military prisoners being shot to death in a forest in East Prussia and things like that.
Oh, it's a terrible time. And your parents must have been very committed to let you help.
Well, they were, but they had to bring me into it very slowly. And the first inkling I got was as we arrived near Germany on a ship, my father had gone ahead. My mother says, "Don, where did I take you last summer?" I said, "Well, you drove me to Montana to a ranch." She said, "Right, but now you've got to understand something. You have to listen very carefully. I do not know how to drive. And when we get to Germany, your father's going to get up with me early in the morning, maybe 5 o'clock, and some days we're going to go out driving. He's going to teach me how to drive. Anybody ask you about that, he's teaching me because I don't know how to drive." And I said, "Well, Mom, wait a minute, I don't understand." She says, "Well, you're going to have to understand it because there's going to be a lot more changes you're going to have to learn," which included looking in store windows to see if I was being followed, things like that.
Oh. Well, we have McCullers online. I want to give Norma and Waukesha a chance to join in. Norma, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. But I'm wondering if this gentleman has read the book In the Garden of the Beasts by Eric Larson, which You haven't.
I'll look it up.
Yes, it tells the story of William Dodd.
Yes.
Who becomes America's first ambassador to Hitler's Germany.
That's correct.
And it also refers to this Mildred Harnack.
Yes. Ambassador Dodd's daughter's friend.
Yes. Well, anyway, I found this book very interesting, and I was, I was just going to ask if it tells truthfully about what's happening in Germany at the time.
Well, Joel Waldinger, you've had a chance to read this book, or.
I have, and there's several references to Mildred in that book, but there's a Wisconsin connection that I don't think a lot of people are aware of. In the book about Ambassador Dodd in Berlin, there's a story about a Jewish gentleman who's looking for someone to rent his home, and he rents the home to the Dodds between, I think, 1933 and 37. In order, A, to preserve the property, because at that time the Germans were seizing property. But what's interesting is this gentleman's grandson and son live here in Madison. And they helped Eric Larson with the book and with some specific pictures of that house. If you've read the book, you know the story then about this gentleman moving upstairs with his mother.
Yes.
And then more and more members of their family who were Jewish started living in the upstairs of the house while the
yes.
Dodds lived on the lower floors of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be pictures on our webpage of that house. The house no longer exists. It was near the Japanese and Italian embassies in Berlin at the time, and so it was heavily bombed. But our website at WPT.org will have some of those pictures, and the book is authentic. I mean, Mildred was good friends with Martha Dodd, the ambassador's daughter, so yeah. She was in that house.
And actually, we have it posted. We have some connections posted on our Facebook. So if you can go to the Larry Mueller Show, you can click on a direct link to the Wisconsin Public Television spot site, and also to for more information about the documentary on Mildred Fish Harnack.
And I would also suggest anybody that has not read the book to read it, because it's mm-hmm. very, very interesting.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Bonnie in Hartford will turn to you next. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I was on the phone, so I missed that last caller, but I was calling regarding the fact that Kathleen Dunn interviewed the author of Red Orchestra a couple years ago. And that author is Ann Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that, and I was so fascinated by it, I actually wrote to the author. And she recommended another book that has more detail, and that's called Resisting by Sharon Blair Brysack, B-R-Y-S-A-C. And I requested that book from the library, and in that, I learned that she attended in her earlier years West Division High School in Milwaukee, and she was born around the same time that my father was, so I wondered if they could have been classmates, and I have a couple of my father's old yearbooks from those years, and I looked it up, and sure enough, she was
yeah.
a classmate of my father, and she must have moved out east either in her junior or senior year, somewhere around there. But it's just the most fascinating story, and I recommend either of these books to anybody, and I look forward to seeing a public television broadcast.
Yeah, it's going to be something. Joel, a comment?
Yeah, both of those authors, Ann Nelson, who wrote Red Orchestra, and Shireen Blair Brysack, who wrote Resisting Hitler, are both featured in the documentary as autobiographers for Mildred Fish Harnack.
Yeah. So there we go. Thank you very much for calling, Bonnie. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's talk, Joe, maybe you can talk about how Arvid and how Arvid got involved with the whole resistance thing and how Mildred got – I think Mildred got involved because Arvid was involved.
Yeah, I think partly that was it. They had a small circle of friends that met to discuss politics and literature, poetry, things like that. And this group saw their friends being arrested. They saw the crackdown that the Nazis were imposing on people in Berlin, and – They could have either sat and done nothing and put their heads down, or they could engage, and they decided to engage. And that meant, in a very clandestine way, recruiting others to help with leaflets. Mildred Harnack translated speeches from Churchill and from Roosevelt at the time and distributed them, which was illegal. The Nazis had a lock on the media and propaganda and things like that. So that was how it initially started. And they also saw opportunities then later when Donald Heath came to the U.S. Embassy to provide the Americans with information and also the Soviets. Their plan was whoever could help them defeat Hitler and preserve German independence, that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah. And she had a chance. I mean, there was an opportunity for her to get out of Dodge, so to speak, or get out of the country when things blew up and when the war started, and she didn't do it.
She didn't. Arvid had bought her a ticket back to the United States. It didn't have an expiration date on it. It was for a ship, and that's how travel was in those days. And one of the most disheartening things for me was reading a final questionnaire that she had answered the night before her execution, and it was asking for things of value that she had. And there she listed that she still had that boat ticket back to America in her purse the day that she was arrested, but she chose not to use it. She chose to stay and fight for what she believed in.
So many other questions here. Caller would like to know the name of the tutor that Don talked about who threw back his medals. Don, what was the name of that tutor?
Yes, his name was Dr. Paul Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S. And he survived most of the war and then went to find his wife in Poland and disappeared in a burning city. Nobody had ever heard of him after that. I think of him, there's not a day in a week, sometimes all 7 days in a week, that I don't think of all those people.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole business of passing information back and forth, I mean, some of it was ignored by the officials for whatever reasons.
Yeah. And I think Donald could probably elaborate a little bit better on that. But, you know, with the information going to the Soviet Union, for 9 months prior to the Germans invading the Soviet Union, this group had been supplying them through their channels with information that the Germans were going to invade. And Stalin ignored it. He ignored these warnings from Roosevelt. He ignored these warnings from the British. But this group had also supplied specific information on where and when this invasion would happen. And when it reached Stalin's desk, he didn't believe it. He had a few choice comments about the source of this information, and so he completely ignored it. And so when the invasion happened, this group was literally stunned that they had risked their lives to find this information and relay it to the Russians, and it was ignored. And on the American side, it wasn't until many years later that it was revealed that Arvid and Mildred were also helping the Americans, specifically Donald Heath Jr.'s father, and he could probably talk more about that.
Yeah.
I just add there that one of the reasons my father came to Germany was on behalf of President Roosevelt to meet clandestinely with the former Minister of Economics, who was one of Hitler's top war planners. And that man kept us informed of things like the coming invasion, date and time and so forth, the German invasion of Russia. Then my father defended him at the Nuremberg trials because he would have been executed. But there were many other people who I can't tell you their names because in Germany, people who helped the Red Orchestra are viewed as communists and disreputable. But the truth was the organization had maybe three communists in it. There were people, Christian Democrats, Protestants, Mormons, all kinds of people.
And the sort of discovery of you know, they worked for quite a long time before they were actually discovered, and then it was a kind of a monumental blunder on the part of the Russians.
Yes, the Russians' equipment, their WT, or wireless telegraphy equipment, was very poor, and they parachuted a number of people into Germany. But when they tried to transmit vital information from the German Defense Ministry, especially the Air Force, the Russians couldn't hear it because they're using the shoddy goods. And that sort of made a tragedy out of the whole effort.
Yeah.
But there was my father, and he was able to take information from not just Arvid, but others in the Economics Ministry, and through channels it got to the British.
Yeah. But, and maybe you can talk about this, Joel, their names actually came right out over the airwaves.
Right. What happened was that the group started really in around 1933, 34, 35 is when it got active. And as things progressed in Germany, this group ratcheted up what it was doing for the resistance. Stalin had several purges, so the contacts for this group were constantly being called back to Moscow and being put in the, you know, prison or executed. And so by 1941, Moscow was desperate to get in touch with this group again, and they contacted one of their sources in Brussels. And over the radio, in a ciphered message, they sent the names and addresses of three members of this group, including Arvid Harnack. And within a year, the Germans were able to decipher through the code what those names and addresses were. And at that point, all they had to do was show up at those homes and make the arrest. There were code names for Arvid and for other members of the group, but the Soviets, in a blunder, didn't use the code names and, like I said, used the real names and addresses, and that's how the group was apprehended.
That is absolutely amazing. And when they were apprehended, there was some pretty nasty work done on them.
Yeah, there are. Mildred and Arvid were arrested up at the Baltic coast and brought back to Berlin. And Arvid was tortured. He talked to his brother, who was allowed to see him two times. And he whispered to him across the table that he had been tortured. And in some of the pictures from this group, you can see that they're are injuries on the faces of the victims. Mildred Harnack, we know, was verbally tortured. There were eyewitnesses outside the room. And you have to understand, they would be brought for interrogations that would go on for hours on end. They weren't allowed to sleep. They would be woken up in the middle of the night and brought in for interrogations. And on this particular day, the interrogations were very intense and the screaming was very intense. And Mildred was sick at the time. She had had an ectopic pregnancy, hadn't fully recovered. She had tuberculosis. So she was very weak, and prison wasn't a place where she was going to get better. And in this particular day, eyewitnesses saw her brought out on a stretcher. She had literally collapsed from the interrogations.
Well, Bill in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. When I was in Finland, I met an older gentleman who was a spy, and he knew when Hitler was going to attack Russia. He made a phone call to America, and after that, his line was cut. He was not able to use the phone anymore from anywhere. He was being surveyed.
And that's the kind of thing that happened a lot, Joel.
It did happen a lot, you know, and people were, you know, afraid to talk. Mildred and Arvid actually didn't even have a phone in their apartment. They were afraid that someone was going to hear them talking. And, you know, Donald knows, too, the rules that were put in place about what you talk about and don't talk about in the apartment, where it was could very likely be bugged.
Right. One of the things that made me feel very bad, she wanted very much, every time I came to see her, which was at least twice a week, to tell her the news from the BBC, because we listened to it every night. And I just couldn't do it. And Arvid agreed that that was not something to be said inside their apartment, because it would have been the end for them if they knew that a foreigner was giving them news from England.
And so they were in jail for, well, quite a while. I mean, underwent some really nasty interrogation.
They were arrested in September of 1942, September 7th. The trial started in mid-December, and he was executed around December 22nd of that year. She was first found not guilty in the trial. I shouldn't say not guilty. She was sentenced to 6 years of prison. And then Hitler directly intervened and said, no, we don't want any martyrs. Basically, we want her dead. And she was retried, and she was then executed in February of 1943 by guillotine.
Yeah, and he was hung up on
a special
meat hooks,
a small rope. It was a Nazi torture tactic that they had designed specifically for this group, so that when the victims were hung, they had a slow, painful death.
Yeah. And, of course, there were quite a few people then that wound up from that Red Orchestra group.
There were more than 100 people arrested. You know, there were 18 women executed as part of this group. So it wasn't just men. Women played a very large role in this group, and had some of the more dangerous jobs of transporting the information, the Soviet radios and that type of thing. But it was one of Germany's largest resistance networks.
And
I'd like to cut in with something there.
Sure.
Because it may not be known. My father was with General Eisenhower during the war, and he was telling Eisenhower about some of the Germans who worked for us clandestinely, giving us information. At that point, another general, a very fine man that I think I know personally, said, well, I don't think we need to tell the American people about good Germans. We've got the war effort at home, and we've got to keep our people working in the munitions plants, building airplanes, and so on. We're going to have to keep painting the Germans as black as we can. And Eisenhower agreed with that. That's one of the reasons why the Harnacks and other people who contributed to the American intelligence effort were never written about. But the New York Times did catch information about Mildred, and there was a short article in the New York Times back in the, I think, around 43. And my understanding from what my father told me was that the Times management was told, that's enough of that kind of talk, just don't report anything more like that.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, after they've done this service and really died in service of the United States and Russia and, well, the Allies, they were sort of vilified. And that is really too bad. And I'm glad you got into that, Joel, in your documentary and then how that sort of works its way out.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is there's still FBI and CIA files that are sealed or heavily redacted. I have one from the CIA that says 54 pages denied in its entirety. So there's still information about this group that's not being completely revealed. But what we need to understand is most of what the CIA and the FBI learned was from the final Gestapo report. So the Americans believe basically what the murderers of Mildred and Arvid Harnack wrote down after the fact, claiming that they were this huge communist spy organization. And only after the fall of the wall did we learn the truth. And there's still some truth that we don't know from our own government.
And that comes out in the conversation and the documentary. Joel, it's thank you so much for producing the documentary. Tell us now, when is it air and what are the times here?
Yep. Wisconsin's Nazi Resistance, the Mildred Fish Harnack story will air November 7th at 8 p.m. on Wisconsin and Milwaukee Public Television. So statewide in Wisconsin on November 7th at 8 p.m.
And check out, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and you can get a direct link to the documentary and more information about it. Don Heath Jr., thank you so much.
Oh, it's a great pleasure.
I appreciate it very much. And Joel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joel Waldinger produced the Mildred Fish Harnack story for Wisconsin Public Television. Don Heath Jr. Knew the Fish Harnacks in Berlin, where his father, Don Heath Sr., was the first secretary of the U.S. Embassy back in 1937. I tell you what, it's a fascinating documentary. I'm really glad I had a chance to see it, and I hope you get a chance to see it as well. And I hope you'll stay tuned, because we're going to talk about weather next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.